भद्रं करुणे दुष्मयामि देवाः भद्रं पश्ये माक्षभिर्यजत्राः स्थिरैरङ्गैः सुषुवागुंसश्च नूभिः यशेम देवहितं यदायुः स्वस्ति न इन्द्रो वृद्धश्रवाः स्वस्ति न पूषा विश्ववेदाः स्वस्ति न सार्षो अरिषनेमिः स्वस्ति नो बृहस्पतिर्दधातु ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः.
In verse 23 of the Catechism.
Akaro mayate vishwam, akaro mayate vishwam, ukaras chapi tayajasam, ukaras chapi tayajasam, makaras chapunapragnam, makaras chapunapragnam. नामात्रे विद्यते गतिः नामात्रे विद्यते गतिः.
So in the Parika we've gone through, he's dealt now with the so now we're so now we're at the
now he has to wrap it up for the 12th verse of the Upanishad. So he says here is the now this is for the person who has understood now. The akaraha of the a-u-m, the letter a, the akara, nayate it. Now the akara, this letter a, is the karta, the letter a karta, the doer, the subject. The akara, nayate, takes one to vishwa. The akara will take you to leads one. Ni, nai means to lead. So the akara leads one to the vishwa. The ukara cha, and the ukara, api feels familiar, and the ukara also, so ukara cha. I didn't do this Sunday, did I?
No.
Okay. Akaraha nayate vishwam. Ukaraha cha api taijasam. Makaraha cha punaha pragnam. Na amatre vidyate. So it says the akara of the omkara, the akara will take you to vishwa. Ukara cha api tajasam. Nayate goes to all of them. And the ukara, the letter u, will take you to tajasa. Tajasa is the dreamer. Vishwa is the waker. So the ukara and the ukara also. Tajasa will take you to Tajasa, the dreamer. And the Makara, Makaraha cha punaha, and again, the Mahaka, and the Makara, the letter Ma, will take you to Prajna, to the deep sleeper. Na amatre vidite gatihi. But when we come to the amatra, now the amatra is different than a matra means that matra which is not there. The a negates the matra. So that matra, that quarter, that is not there, a matra. So when there is no matra, na a matra, when the a matra vidyate. So when there is no matra, in the a matra, in the absence of the matra, he says, na vidyate gatihi. There is no gati. There is no place to go, right? So he says the akara, when you think of the akara, that will take you to the vishwa, to the dreamer, to the waker. When you think of ukara, right, the ukara then, the ukara will take you to tajasa, the dreamer. The makara, that will take you to the deep sleeper.
But in the amatra, there is no gati. There is no gati. There is no place to go. It won't take you anywhere. Right? Because it is you. Right? There's no place to go. And so here, just a little bit more here when we get into it. When we say the akara, for the person, for the one who understands, so when you say the letter om is a pratika, it could just be chanted as a symbol, om, as a sound symbol for meditation, om, 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 but it need not bring anything other than itself as a sound. But if you say om, it's a beautiful sound, you know, it's a sacred symbol, but it doesn't contain any knowledge for you other than the beautiful sound that it is. The knowledge would be kind of the knowledge that it's a sacred symbol, the most sacred symbol of all of the Vedas, you know. And chanting it is very auspicious. Om, om. But here the whole Upanishad is on the meaning of om. And the Upanishad is loading this sacred syllable with meaning. One, by giving similarities, right? We're doing this, the samanyas, and by unfolding the meaning and the relationship of each one of the letters to all that is, to Ishwar, actually. So it's loaded the akara, the letter a, with Vishwa and Vaishvara. Meaning, remember that the Atma is Chatushpa. At the very beginning it says this. The Atma is Chatushpa. It has four quarters. That means the Atma, the self that I am, which is Brahman. It starts right away with this. There is Brahman, you know. The meaning of Om is Brahman. Brahman is this Atma. This Atma has four quarters. The waking state, the dream state, the deep sleep state, and that state which is free, the Turiya, the fourth quarter. Okay. And so, now, these three states, waking, dream, deep sleep, are in the second half of the Upanishad being hooked up with these little letters of the Omkara, so that when you think of when you say it brings to mind Vishwa, Vaishvara, Virat. And it does because the Upanishad is giving you certain associations to make that come to mind, certain similarities, so that now when you say the akara, you know that is the primary sound. Is the sound that pervades all of the other letters. All letters are pervaded by this initial the primary sound that doesn't require anything. And so this simple sound, which is also the first, takes you in your mind to Vaishvara, to Ishwara. Because that pervades, Ishwara is in full form. If we say as Vaishvara, Vaishvara or Virat means the same. Ishwara is in full form. And so the self is pervading all that is. From the standpoint of Vishwa or Vaishvara, the Atma pervades everything. And just like the pervades all letters, Vishwa, Vaishvara pervades everything that it is. Remember that Hiranyagarbha, as the subtle Ishwara, the subtle form of Ishwara, pervades Vaishvara. And Prajna, Ishwara, pervades Hiranyagarbha. So when we're at the level of Vaishvara, this great waking state, every single thing that is pervaded. And so, and it is also first in the standpoint that from Vaishvara, or from the individual Vishwa, it's the Vishwa that goes to the dream state and goes to the deep sleep state. And so these are just associations to make you, to implant on you, this relationship between the letter A of A, U, M, and this waking state. And also, as this unfoldment, remember we've done so much of this unfoldment just in reference to Brahman as the waker, Brahman as the dreamer, Brahman as the deep sleeper, Brahman as the Turiya, as the fourth, who is the self of all three. We've already done all of this type of unfoldment. And so now, when you say the letter A, that should take you to Vishwa, the waker, but it must also take you to Vaishvanara, to Virat, the whole creation. Because in the unfoldment, the conscious being is free of the waker, and free of the waker, free of the dreamer, and free of the deep sleeper. And yet the self of the waker, the self of the dreamer, and the self of the deep sleeper. What that means, when we do this type of anvayavyatireka, when this is, that is, when this is not, that is not, when we do this type of logic, what you have to realize is that if myself is the self of the waker, and that waking state, the entire waking state, which includes the waker and the waking state, right? So when I say, if I say the waking state, the waker is included in the waking state. Just like in this room, I am the waker, and this waker here is included in this room, right? So this is the room state, which includes the waker. You see what I mean? So the waking state includes the waker. That means that Vaishvanara, or Virat, Ishvara, from the standpoint of the waking state, includes this body, mind, sense organs. And so if I recognize that this, that here, in this waking state, I, the waker, in the waking state, this conscious being, the Atma, that I am, right, is itself the self of the dream state. Okay? When the dream state is there, the dream state pushes away the waking state. They're not existing simultaneously. So when I go from the waker and the waking, I go from the waker and the waking state, the waker who is in the waking state, to the dreamer who is in the dream state. See what I mean? So the dreamer and the dream state, when they are there, the waker in the waking state is not there. And in the deep sleep state, there's no subject-object relationship at all. There's no dream sleeper and dream state to be differentiated at that time, because it's all in a causal condition. So what this means when I'm doing this type of anvayavyatireka, when the dream state replaces the waking state, right? The dream state is replacing not only me, the waker, but the waking world. And so the waker belongs and is part and parcel of the waking world, which I, the Atma, illumine. And so I, the self, that is the self of the waker and the waking world, that self remains in the dream state, or the dreamer, which has displaced the waking state and the waker. And so as I start to understand this, just these two states, when I'm talking about the Atma is the one who is the self of the waker and the waking state. And so I am both the waker and the waking state. And so now when I say the Akara, as I understand this, what the Akara brings to mind is Vaishvanara, Virat, Ishvara, the waking state, which includes all the jivas, including this one. Right? So you don't, when you say the your body, mind, sense organs is included in the waking state. Right? And so brings the Atma, at the Atma, yourself, which is Brahman, as the self of the waking state, which includes the waker. So that comes to the When you go to the it brings the dreamer, the subtle, which is included in the dream state. And so now the Atma is the self, who is the self of the waking state, and the waker is the self of the dream state and the dreamer. And in the Makar, when we say the Makar goes to Prajna. It takes you to Prajna. But Prajna, as Swamiji talks about this in his commentary, who cares about going to sleep? The Makara, the letter Ma, is not just taking you to the deep sleep state, it's taking you to the causal condition, which is Ishvara, which is the Maya Upadhi. The Maya Upadhi, Upadhi means the conditioning adjunct of the whole Maya. The Maya Upadhi, from the standpoint of Ishvara, is just manifest knowledge, manifest and unmanifest knowledge. So you say unmanifest knowledge or the causal condition of all knowledge. That's the Maya Upadhi. From the standpoint of the limited jiva, we call that ajnanam, right? Because an individual mind doesn't have all knowledge. It's a product of that total manifestation. And so when it goes into that causal condition, it's in a state of, that mind is in a state of ajnanam. But for Ishvara, it's totally different. There's no ajnanam at all. There's just simply the causal condition of manifest knowledge. It would be like the difference. This, I don't know if this works, but let me try it. Right now, for you, there is so much unmanifest knowledge, right? For you as a jiva. And I'm talking about because if all of the knowledge that you actually have were manifest right now, you wouldn't be able to function. You know, you have manifest before you whatever manifest knowledge is useful, but you have a lot of manifest knowledge. But it's yours. Yeah, there's no ajnana there. You also have a tremendous amount of ajnana. Because in terms of the infinite universe, there's so much that you don't know. That there's no possible. It's ajnana. There's no way to bring it forward. Like if I ask you to think of a boat, you'll think of a boat. If I ask you to think of a tree, you'll think of a tree. But what if I ask you to think of something that you've never heard of and have not the slightest concept of what it is? It doesn't bring forward anything because you have ajnana. So how many things like that are there? How many things are there that we don't even know that we don't know? Right? We don't know that we don't know because we have no idea about them. That's ajnanam. That's the condition of a limited upadhi within an infinite upadhi. So Ishvara doesn't have that. For Ishvara, everything is either in unmanifest knowledge or manifest knowledge. Whereas for you, there's a tremendous amount of knowledge that is unmanifested in a given time. Right? And only a little bit that is manifest. But the amount of ajnanam there is might as well be infinite. See what I mean? Because the antikarana, the body, mind, sense organs, the antikarana is limited. And so what is ajnanam basically? Prajna for the jiva in unmanifest condition, for Ishvara, is the whole Maya Upadhi. And so now, if when I'm going from the the dreamer and the waking and the waking state, as my being, as myself, it's not just the waker. It's the waking state. The Vishwa in Vaishvana. I go to the dream state. It's the Taijasa and Giranyagarbha. So that's what comes to mind. When I go to the Prajna, the causal condition, it's Ishvara. Ishvara comes to mind. Ishvara means Brahman plus the Maya Upadhi. That's what Ishvara is. Brahman with the Maya Upadhi. That same Ishvara, when it becomes manifest, is we call Vaishvanara. The halfway, in that halfway position, is Hiranyagarbha. In its causal condition, just the absolute unmanifest knowledge is what we call Ishvara, that capacity. Brahman with the Maya Upadhi is Ishvara. Brahman with the Maya Upadhi, which is Mithya, right, is what we call Ishvara. If we're just talking about Brahman alone, all we're doing is pointing out what is actually there as Satyam. The self which is actually there as Satyam. Bringing in the Mithya Upadhi of Brahman, then we have Ishvara. We have Ishvara as the Maya, that Maya capacity, or we have Ishvara manifest as Hiranyagarbha, with Tiger as the name for the Jiva, or manifest all the way out as Vaishvanara, with Vishwa as the Jiva. And so now, say this Omkara now, its meaning is clear to you. Then when you say Om, everything comes. The A-U-M, everything comes. The whole Ishvara comes in a very full way. You know? And you can break it apart into A-U-M, or you just say Om and it is all there. And so now this Omkara has meaning. And so as you say Om, so now this is what he's saying. As you say Om, as if we were to break it down, as you say Om,
the Vaishvanara, and Hiranyagarbha, and Ishwara, the whole thing comes, the whole manifest creation comes. But when you say the fourth mantra, which is a mantra, when you say the Turiya, the fourth one, the Om, so listen to when you say Om, and that silence that comes after, but that which is not a mantra, but that from which the mantra comes, that from that which the Om comes. So you say Om, the Om brings the vision of the creation of Ishwara, and then the silence in which the A goes into the U, goes into the Makara, and the Makara resolves into the silence. That silence doesn't take you anywhere. It doesn't take you anywhere. It just leads you home. Right? So, the Atma is silent. The silence of your being, the silence itself is the part of the symbol that goes to the Atma. And so when you say Om, Ishwara comes. When the Om resolves into the Makara, right? And then the Makara resolves into silence. Where does that take you? It doesn't take you anywhere. It just leaves you with yourself. That's exactly what it says. Did you say the Vaishvanara comes, the U? They happen simultaneously. The Vaishvanara comes, the U, Hiranyagarbha comes, the Makara all resolves into Ishwara, and then Ishwara resolves into the silence. Where does the silence take you? There's no, with the silence, the amatra, there's no gati, there's nowhere to go. There's just the silence from which the Om comes and goes back into. And in fact, when you're doing the mantra Om, or any, not just the mantra Om, when you're doing any mantra, like in japa, as you do it, say you're doing Om, 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 Om. At first it's Om, silence, the amatra, the Om, amatra. Om, silence. Om, silence. Om, silence. But after you've done it for a while, what you realize is that the Om is taking place in silence. There's the ground of being, the ground of silence, in which the Om is taking place. And so a natural viveka takes place as you're chanting the mantra. It could be Om Namah Shivaya, it could be any mantra. There's a viveka, discrimination that takes place between the mantra and the silence, where you realize that the silence is the ground of the mantra and itself is not changing at all. It's not going through any type of change at all, but it's the very ground being. That silence is what is Brahman. So now when you say Om, there's more to the Om than just Om. There's the ground of being, there's the silence in which the Om is occurring. And that silence is Brahman. So that's why he's saying here, the akara leads to Vishwa, the ukara to Tajasa, the matara again to Pranya. But when there is no matra in the amatra, when there's no matra there, then there's no gati. It doesn't take you to anywhere. It keeps you exactly where you are at your own being. And that silence, that non-movement, right, there's no movement at all, That silence is Brahman. Is the alambana, is the symbol, the silence that the Om enjoys is the fourth pada. See what I mean? It's Brahman. And so now, having said that, we go into the last verse of the Upanishad, which is verse 12. Repeat after me. I'll read it breaking the Sunday. Amataha.
Amataha.
Chaturtaha.
Chaturtaha.
Avyavahariyaha.
Avyavahara.
Prapancha upashamaha.
Prapancha upashamaha.
Or you can just say Prapancha upashamaha.
Prapancha upashamaha.
Shivaha.
Shivaha.
Advaitaha.
Advaitaha.
Evam.
Evam.
Omkaraha.
Omkaraha.
Atma.
Atma.
Eva.
Eva.
Samvishati.
Samvishati.
Atmana.
Atmana.
Atmanam.
Atmanam.
Yaha.
Yaha.
Evam.
Evam.
Veda.
Veda.
So I'll read it again, breaking the sentence. Amatraha. Chaturtha. Avyavaharyaha. Prapancha. Upashamaha. Shivaha. Advaitaha. Evam. Omkaraha. Atma. Eva. Samvishati. Atmana. Atmanam. Yaha evam veda. So he says, the amatraha, which is the chaturtha, the amatra is the fourth. The chaturtha is the same as turiya. The amatra means that which has no matra. The a negates matra. Right? So that which cannot be measured, which has no measurement, it's not a letter. Right? So the one that has no letter, the amatraha, that is chaturtha, that is the fourth of the four padas, or the four matras. So the lack of a matra is the fourth. Silence. That silence is the amatra. That is chaturtha, that is the fourth. And that one, the fourth pada, okay? And that is avyavahariha. Avyavahariha, remember vyavahara? Vyavahara means empirical existence. Avyavaharya means it is free from any type of empirical existence. Why? Because from the standpoint of the mantra, there is no letter, there's no block, there's no speech, there's not going to be any type of mental. If there's no speech, like say they use in the commentary, they'll use this example. If I say chair, the word chair, just the word, that will bring the image in my mind of a chair. Right? If I say rug, it brings the image of a rug. Right? So any word that you have is associated, or any sound, any meaningful sound, is associated with some sort of rupa, so nama rupa. Right? And so just like what they've done this now with the if these become meaningful matras and om becomes meaningful, it will evoke an image, right? So evokes vishwa. It takes you to vishwa. U takes you to tajasa. Makara takes you to ishwar, to prajna. But what does take you to? No matra. And so the amatra doesn't take you anywhere. It just leads you exactly where you are. Right? So he says, when that is the case, there's no speech, and then there's nothing evoked, no form is going to be evoked, so no vak, no manas. Then what happens is there's no activity. There's no empirical reality. There's no namarupa. No namarupa, name and form, is being evoked at all. So it's avyavaharya. It now does not exist. The empirical reality is not being evoked or called forth by the amatra, by the absence of the mantra. Okay? You understand? So it's avyava, the unnegates, vyavahara, vyavaharya, the unnegates it. So avyavaharya. No empirical reality is there for this amatra. There is prapancha upashamaha. There is the complete resolution of the prapancha, of the world. Now, that includes, when you say it here in this sense, the world includes both karya and karana, cause and effect. So when you say there's the whole prapancha goes into a resolution, you can look at that on two levels. You can look at Vishwa and the Vaishvanara Virat and Hiranyagarbha resolving into the Makara. You can look at the An-U resolving into the Makara. Okay? Which is true. But there's the Karana. The Makara is acting as the cause there. It is the cause, and out of the Makara come the An-U. Right? So A-U-M, the An-U resolve into the Makara and come out of the Makara. So we can look at that as the
upashama, the resolution of the Vishwa and Tejasa, of the waker and the dreamer. But this is keeping the karana. And karya karana, there's duality there, cause and effect. They're dependent on each other, right? The cause and the effect. But now when you say the om, the a and the u go into the makara, but the om itself, the ma itself, resolves into the silence. And so now what they mean here, in terms of a mantra, when they say that this chaturth, this fourth, where there is no mantra, the a, the whole thing resolves, both cause and effect, karya karana, both of them resolve into the silence. So now it's just, if I say, see, if I go like this, if the, let me just do it. Om, 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 om. So what's happening there? Om is going to ma, and om is coming out of om. Om, 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 om. But if I go om, 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 then what's happening? I have om, silence, om, silence, om, silence. Now the whole om is resolving into the silence. If we talk about this. It's very neat, really. Okay, so now that means that the karya and karana, where the makar is the karana, it's the cause of the and the u, because the and the u go into the ma and come out of the ma. Okay? Just like the waking state and the dream state go into the causal condition, into the deep sleep, and come out of the deep sleep. The deep sleep state is causal. Okay? But that deep sleep state itself resolves into the amata, the silence. And so here he says, when they say prapancha upashamaha, this state, the amata, is where the entire creation resolves. Okay? And that is what we call Shiva. Shiva means that which is most auspicious. Shankara talks about it when we want it. Well, how do we talk about auspicious? What do we really mean when we say something is auspicious? He says it means that its swarupa, its nature, is ananda. When something is auspicious, it's ananda swarupa. Auspiciousness means ananda. Its being is ananda, ananda swarupa. So that which is auspicious, it is Shiva, the most auspicious ananda. And it is advaita. It is non-dual, because all duality is resolved. Duality is in the a-u-m, right? And even in the makara, from its own standpoint, it's not dual, but it's causal. So, you know, it's the and the go into it and come out of it. Whereas for the silence, in fact, nothing is going into it or going out of it. Right? It is the very ground of being, that all the enjoys that ground of being, the enjoys that ground of being, and in fact the makara enjoys that ground of being. That's why the atma is the self of the it's the self of Vishwa, it's the self of Vaishvanara, it's the self of Hiranyagarbha, it's the self of Ishvara. And that self doesn't go anywhere. That self remains exactly the same and is the self of all of the three. Like that, when you're chanting Om, when you start, you see the ma very graphically, the coming out of silence and the ma going into silence. Or if you just say the Om comes from silence and it goes into silence. It's bordered by silence. But then as you chant the Om, you recognize that that silence, the conscious being, right, is there, you know, as the support for the entire omkara. If I say om, the om in between, there's the silence, om, silence. But actually the silence is what's holding the om in every part of it. And so that viveka, that's the viveka, in fact, that we have to do, right? As jivas, in order to gain self-knowledge, that what has to happen is that you have to recognize. In fact, in the whole teaching methodology, you start out with I am this physical body. Right? The Atma is this physical body. I am here as the waker. I am this physical body. And then you realize, yes, and I am the one who is the dreamer also. Right? And I am the one who is the deep sleeper. You know? And so then I have to recognize there's a whole viveka that has to take place in reference to each one of these conditions. To recognize that I am the one, you know, who is present to all of the conditions, even though all of the conditions negate themselves. Every new condition negates the following condition, but I'm the self of all of them. This is exactly true in the waking state too. In the waking state, you are the self of every experience you have. But you're having one experience at a time, right? That experience is gone, now we have a new one. That's gone, we have a new one. That's gone, we have a new one. I'm the self of all experiences. I'm not negated by the experiences, even though every experience negates the previous one. Right? And so that's an anvayavyatireka. When this experience is, I am. When this experience is gone, I still am. When this experience is, I am. When happiness is, when joy is, I am. When sadness is, I still am. You could just take, you know, when babyhood is, I am. When adolescence is, I am. You know, when your 20s are, I am. But these conditions are negating each other. The little baby is not the 20-year-old. So it just, you can take any moment. You can take 5 minutes and divide it into innumerable seconds. When this second is, I am. Next second is, I still am. Next second is, I still am. You can go to waking, dream, deep sleep, you know, which really is massive. It really covers the whole 24-hour cycle. I am the, when the waker is, that's me. When the dreamer is, that's me. When the deep sleeper is, that's me. These all negate each other. So these all become prakriyas, teaching methodologies to help me recognize, okay, who's remaining? Who remains when, as all of these experiences go on changing? What about me is not negated by my emotions, by my experiences, by moment to moment? What about me is not negated? So that one that is not negated, the experience as being the very self of the experience, but free of the experience also. And that's the whole thing. I am this body, but I'm free of this body. I'm this mind, but I'm free of this mind. If I work free of it, then whatever it's doing, as it changes thought after thought after thought, I would be on my way. I would be going. This body grows and all the cells are changing every 7 years, I would be somebody else. Waking state, dream state, deep sleep state. You just think about it in terms of, get away from the idea of matter for a moment, because this is, I think it's helpful. And just think about life in terms of lived experience, actual experience. And for you to, your task is to differentiate who you are amidst this lived experience. And you are going to be the one in the experience, because you're really only having experience, right? Whatever it may be, it's experience. You are the one in the experience that is not negated, because they're all your experiences. So what about it in your world of experience that includes both subject and object? You would be the subject. Who is that subject? What are you like? Who is the non-negatable me? Who's the non-negatable me? Who is it that is always here no matter what the experience? Who is it that is the self of every experience? Who is the self of the waking state? Who is the self of the dream state? Who is the self of the deep sleep state? That's very important, because in the deep sleep state, you are not a knower. Right? There's no knowership there. There's conscious being there, but there's no knowership there. So who is it? Yeah. Who are you? Who can't be negated? And so this whole Upanishad is about that. Now the other thing about this, you're going to have to negate anything that changes and anything that can be objectified. Because it can be objectified, it's not you. It's something you're aware of. So that's got to go. Right? If it changes, that's got to go also. So any type, what that means is any type of name and form. Anything that exists within duality, subject to change, that has to go. That experience has to go. But now the thing is, even as I negate all of these names and forms and all of these objectifiable experiences, I still am. So it's not that in the negation of all the things I'm aware of, I'm negating myself. You're negating the things that you're aware of as being you. You're not negating yourself. In fact, the one thing you can't negate is you. Because you are the one who is present in every experience that you have. The experiences are negated. Not your own presence. The subject side of the experience is negated. And the thing is that much of what you had taken to be you belongs to the objects. You've taken so much of you to be an object, like your body is objectified, your sense organs are objectified, your thoughts are objectified, your emotions are objectified, even the I thought is objectified, all of your knowledges are objectified. They're known. Right? You're the subject. Right? And so as you strip off all of these changing objectified things, you're just left with yourself. And who is that? Who is that ultimate subject? The subject that cannot be objectified. Now you may think, well, if I can't be objectified, then I don't exist. Well, that doesn't make any sense at all. Because that means that in the whole subject-object relationship that we experience, the only thing that is real is what's objectified, not the subject that is the conscious being who is the center of all objectifications. You know what I mean by objectification, right? Something known. I'm the center of every objectification. And so, at some point, this has to end, unless you think that the objectification is anadi, which means beginningless. This is objectified, you know, and then this has to be objectified that, and then this objectifies that, and then this objectifies that, and there's no end to it. But actually, that isn't our experience. Our experience is that everything that I take to be a knower is objectified, like my sense organs are knowers, but they're objectified. I'm aware of my sense organs. My mind is a knower. It thinks, it experiences. It's a thinker, you know. It's a doer. It's an enjoyer. But it all is objectified. Now once I objectify, realize that the mind and the sense organs and the mind themselves are objectified, then what's happened is all of the things that are capable of having a knower known relationship in the world are objectified and belong to the waking state or belong to the dream state. And now the conscious being that I'm left with, what is it doing? Right? If I've objectified even the knowership, the knower, the mind and the sense organs, and even the I thought, what am I doing now? Because I'm not thinking, I'm not enjoying, I'm not seeing, I'm not hearing. Those belong to the sense organs in the mind. So what is this me doing? I don't have any hands or legs. I don't have a mouth. I don't have a body. So what am I doing? No? It's amatra. I'm not doing anything. I've never done anything and I never will do anything. Right now you're not doing anything. You're doing all kinds of things. You, with my upadhi, with the sense organs, and the organs of action, and your thoughts, and your emotions, you're doing all kinds of things from the standpoint of the upadhi. Just think of the dream state. You're a dream character in the dream. Look at all of the things you're doing. And all the things all the other jivas are doing, all the things the dream is doing. So much is going on. They're going on through the whole dream, the sattva, rajas, and tamas, all of the activity of the whole dream. all the jivas within the dreams are all doing different things. But what are you doing? The conscious being from whom the dream has come, who sustains the dream, and who the dream resolves. What are you doing? I'm not doing anything. I'm just the self of the whole thing. I'm the very being, I'm the very truth of the entire thing. And if I want to talk about myself as a knower, or a thinker, or a seer, I have to bring in the upadis. I have to bring in the maya upadi. And then that's fine, because the maya upadi is me. It's like the snake is the rope. It is the rope. It has no, it's not away from the rope. So you don't have to be afraid, oh, I'm not doing anything. You can always say, well, I'm doing lots of things through my upadi, through my sense organs, through my mind, through my body, through my hands. I'm doing all kinds of things. That's the maya upadi. But the self of the maya upadi, what am I doing? I am the silence, I am the truth of the whole thing. But if I take away the upadi, I'm just the satchit, the conscious being, which is the self of all of it. I'm the being of all of all of it. I'm what is actually here. I'm the self of the whole thing. I am just like the rope is the self of the snake, or the clay is the self of the pot. I am the self of this whole thing. And I'm complete. I don't need anything. This whole creation is a manifestation of me. It's not like any of this is anything but me. And what am I doing? Nothing. Everything is coming from me, sustained by me, and resolving into me. I am itself. But I am what we call material cause, you know, upadana karana. I'm the vivarta upadana karana. I'm the self that doesn't undergo any type of change. That's what, why maya? Maya means yama iti maya, that which doesn't change. That which, that for the maya, yama iti maya, that which is not, that is maya. That which is not, that is maya. But there's tricky. That which is not. The isness which maya enjoys is me. I am its very self. That's why when you wake up from a dream, nothing happens. And it's the same. That's why waking and dream are just, dream is the Achilles heel to understand all of this. When you wake up from a dream, there's a whole world that has taken place and you've been very engaged in it. And then you wake up. That whole world is gone. It's all mitya. The whole world, the whole mitya world is gone. Nothing has been lost, even though that world is gone. What is remains. And what was the very truth of the whole dream, that nothing happens to it. So there's been no, there is no experience of death, there is no experience of loss, thing. Nothing happens. And that's the same. What is subjectively true, that maya relationship, from its own standpoint, is exactly the same as in the waking state. If you go from its own standpoint, if I compare the dream to the waking state, then I'll say, well, this has a, Swamiji will laugh and say, this is a longer joke, the waking state. And the dream is happening within it. But from the dream position versus the waking position, both are equally maya. And both equally enjoy the same one, me. And when both of them resolve into their causal condition, the deep sleep state, and come out of that deep sleep state, I am the self also of that deep sleep state. But you would think, yeah, but I'm not a knower. No, you're not a knower. Atma is not a knower. Your upadis have to be awake for that knowership. You have to have eyes. You have to have a mind. But that mind and those eyes and this body is you. It's not that just that this body, mind, sense organs are you. This whole thing is you. This whole universe is you. Just like it's easy for you to understand with the dream, the whole dream is me. You don't think, oh, you know, I had this dream, but I was only the dream character in the dream. No, I was the whole dream. And then I was identified with the dream character in myself, the whole dream. Like that, this is myself, all of this. But anvayavyatireka, when this waking state is I am, when it's replaced by the dream state, I still am. Deep sleep state, I still am. Waking state again, I still am. I'm the self of it all. I'm the Vivarta Upadana Karana. Means I'm the self of all of it, myself not going undergoing any material cause of it, myself not undergoing any change, ever. And never undergoing change. That's why in this world of change, because you are pervasively present to every experience that you have, your mind can differentiate itself from me, the conscious being that is not changing. Because you actually are predominant. You are predominant in every experience that you have. And what happens is, once this viveka is there, you're the stable one in which all of this is going on. And that becomes, you become awake to that. And so here, he's saying, okay, the self that you are is Advaita. It's non-dual, one without a second. Because this Maya, the Maya Upadhi, the waking state and the dream state and the deep sleep state, they continually negate each other. And if you go into either the waking or the dream where there's duality present, right, that duality is coming and going. Coming into existence and going out of existence. So it has no existence of its own. That's why Advaita. Maya doesn't make for two. If something comes into being and goes out of being, it's not enjoying being itself. It's bordered by non-existence, then it has non-existence in the middle. It's not like non-existence morphs into existence and then goes into non-existence again. Nothing can come from non-existence. And so the stable fact is existence. Existence never is coming into existence or going out of existence. And that existence is me. It is non-identifiable me. It's the one thing you can never escape or get rid of. Everything comes into it and goes out of it. And so, that being the case, the nature of really reality is Advaita, non-dual, because you can't establish another thing. If you think you can establish another thing, you remember that second thing, whatever it is, has to be objectified. If it exists within duality, because now it's objectified, you know, then it's subject to change. Right? If once it enters into time and space, it's subject to change. If it's subject to change, it's nitya. Because anything subject to change is bordered by that non-duality, by that non-existence. Any change is the non-existence of the prior condition. And so everything will fall apart in that. You won't be able to find it. Anybody won't spend an hour on that. That's a whole unfoldment. We've done it many times. So, Shivaha Advaita. So now he says, Ya Evam Veda. So then he says, Evam in this manner is the Omkara, is the Atma. Evam Omkaraha Atma Eva. The Omkara is the Atma. Sambishati Atmana Atmanam Yaha Evam Veda. He who knows in this manner, that person, he enters into the self by the self. Sambishati, he means he enters in without ever coming out again. He enters into the self by the self. That last quarter of the verse I'm going to do next week.
Good.
Yeah. Let's take a minute.
Shanti Shantihi Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.
seemed to me when you were talking about Ishwara having unmanifest knowledge, that that's a way of limiting Ishwara by saying that there are things that are there's knowledge that's unmanifest.
Only in the causal condition. Actually, one thing I don't know, this is, and I don't think that the Upanishads, it does kind of get into a little bit of this, not the Upanishads exactly, but some of the stories about Maya kind of touch on these things. When we say unmanifest causal condition, we view that the Upanishads teach that the creation is cyclical. Means it will come into manifestation and go into unmanifest condition cyclically. And so in that unmanifest condition, the whole universe is unmanifest. From the standpoint of Ishwara, it would be like nirvikalpa samadhi. It's like for Ishwara, what would the jiva be going to sleep into a causal condition? For Ishwara would be just going into nirvikalpa samadhi. In nirvikalpa samadhi, there's no creation present, there's no duality present at all, but the maya is still there. So just like if you as a jiva were to go into nirvikalpa samadhi, at that time there's no experience of a mind or sense organs or a universe. But then the mind comes out of that condition, you know, and then hooks up with duality again. So when the creation, in creation as a whole, goes into unmanifest condition, it'd be similar to nirvikalpa samadhi. And so that means that all knowledge, if you look at all of this as manifest knowledge, that manifest knowledge goes into its causal condition, which for Ishwara would be like a nirvikalpa samadhi of the whole creation.
And when it's unmanifest, is it still there, or what's
like
that condition like?
It's still there, just like for you, if you were in nirvikalpa samadhi, or even if you look at all of the things that you know that aren't manifest, they're still there. They're not. It's knowledge, but it's in unmanifest condition. Why I like when Swamiji started over the last several years using for Ishwara limitless unmanifest knowledge, absolute unmanifest knowledge. Why that's so beautiful really is because it makes you understand the creation as knowledge rather than as material. You know, like when the creation is in full form, like Vaishvanara, you have the stula, the subtle, the physical body, and the sukshma, stula sharira and sukshma sharira, the physical body, the Vaishvanara, the virat. And then you have your nigarbha or the tejas of the subtle. But when you have a dream or an imagination, mm-hmm. you also have the physical body from within the dream, the physical body and the subtle. So then you still have sense organs and you have a mind and you're engaged and you have emotions and all of this stuff is going on in the dream. And then there's the Vaishvanara also, in a sense, within the dream, just to understand. And so what is physical for us and subtle for us as being two very kind of very different things, from the standpoint of a manifestation, it's all more like an infinite mind in which you can make these distinctions. Because the universe is known. The whole universe is known from the whole Ishwara, from the whole Maya Upadhi, is known. Right? That's what Ishwara is. And we can give reasons for it. There's sattva that goes through the entire infinite Upadhi. There's rajas, the active principle, equally goes through the entire Upadhi. Namarupa, the tamas, goes through the entire Upadhi. So the whole thing is known, the whole thing is in perpetual motion. And then it's full of namarupa, full of names. That's the nature of it.
Would it be accurate to say Ishwara is not so much the everything that could that ever has been, ever will be, could possibly be all at once, but just what is right now, in the same way that when we are the Ishwara of our own dream, there's a certain dream happening, even though there's a possibility, there's limitless possibilities. And but only one dream is happening.
You could say, but you could say, like, and this is exactly where I was going, this is what I don't know, and but that so many stories are playing around with this, whether infinite knowledge is manifest at the same time, and so past, present, and future are all here now at one time.
Well, that's my question, because if you're saying that there's unmanifest knowledge, then that would not be true. Right.
Yes, that would not be true. And that's what I don't know. Though when they're talking about all the Maya stories, the stories they're making up sometimes are looking like, from just a story level, everything is manifest every time. And in one way, it doesn't make any difference. Because unmanifest knowledge is still knowledge. You know, but the question is, well, even, you know, we've done studies with time. I mean, time is very illusory. The idea of time is illusory. You know, it seems to be the present now. You know, there's a present existing, there's still a present existing, you know, millions of years ago, even on this level, with you know, the studies they've done around time. So, but anyway, what I'm saying is it's very interesting, and I don't really know the answer, and I don't know to what degree the Upanishad goes into the answer to that answer, but it doesn't make any difference in terms of absolute knowledge, whether it's manifest or unmanifest. Just like for you, you have so much knowledge, but it's not manifest at the same time. So what if time were real, if past and present had some sort of reality in a cyclical universe, so that the dinosaurs in this, like in this billions of years for this manifestation, the dinosaurs that were there at one period of time or an unmanifest condition right now, they'll come at the next manifestation or something like that.
I guess for me, it's part of my quest to get a handle on Ishwar.
Yeah.
And just, you know, it's still, I'm not clear on it.
Maybe what will end up happening in the end is you'll realize that there's no way to become omniscient, the jiva to become omniscient, to have the same experience that Ishwar has, or to have the same limitless knowledge that Ishwar has, and so probably beyond imagination. It's be kind of like like a cell in your little toe, you know, trying to figure out what the whole looks like.
So Ishwar is something that, from the perspective of me as a jiva, I can never really get a handle on. I can have symbols for it and sense of it. I mean,
I think that's, on one level that's true. Like, say you want a vision of the Vishwasarupa, the whole creation, all of the levels that exist in the whole infinite creation, that's going to be pretty tough. But
right, without the eyes that Arjuna got to wear for a while.
Yeah, without the magic goggles. But to recognize the being that you are as the self in all beings, that's not far. That's absolutely doable. To recognize everything within your experience as Ishwara, the experience that you're able to have, to recognize all of that as Ishwara, that's very doable. To do an infinite extension to encompass the whole creation, that is doable. But very doable to understand it and know that there's really no other way. But to have a vision of the whole, that needs the magic goggles. Do you understand?
Yeah, if Brahman is one with, not followed by two, and this, it goes into unmanifest condition.
Brahman doesn't go into unmanifest condition. Only the Maya goes into unmanifest condition, never Brahman. Brahman never goes to sleep. There's no unmanifest condition for Brahman.
Okay.
Brahman is not objectifiable. Just like the Atma, by not objectifiable means, the subject can't become the object.
Mm-hmm.
What is truly the subject can't become the object, because what's the dividing line? But it doesn't make any difference because the subject is consciousness. And so it doesn't need to be objectified because it's the very self because of which everything is known. It is that itself. So consciousness can't be objectified nor need it be objectified. That's why we say it's self-evident.
And the cyclical aspect then is
Maya.
Is Maya.
Only Maya. Brahman is not. And Brahman is timeless. You are timeless.
And Ishvara is included in that cyclical.
Yes.
Maya.
But the truth of Ishvara is Brahman. Just like the true truth
okay.
of, you're right?
Okay.
The truth of you is Brahman. So Ishvara is Brahman, right? With the Maya, taking into account the Maya Upadhi. There's no other Ishvara. Mm-hmm. Ishvara is Brahman with the Maya Upadhi.
That's actually my next question. Is that a distortion of Brahman?
No.
In addition to Brahman, is Ishvara greater than Brahman because it has more?
No, it's an incidental addition. It's an incidental attribute. Which means
it has an attribute that Brahman doesn't have.
But when we say incidental, we mean Maya. You mean
right.
So?
But is it more or less than Brahman? Or is it exactly the same? I mean, when you say, because you actually said Ishvara is Brahman plus the Maya Upadhi.
The plus is a scary word. It's a wrong word.
Okay.
You have to say that Maya is an incidental attribute to Brahman.
Okay.
Means that it's the attribute of Maya is mitya. Maya is mitya.
Yeah. Okay.
When you say Maya is mitya, means that there in terms of what is there, there's only Brahman. But Maya is what's responsible for this manifestation of color, of all of this. So we can say like this to maybe answer the question in what I think is a meaningful way, that there's no Brahman without Maya, and there's no Maya without Brahman. But why that's, but the problem, really understand that,
mm-hmm.
you have to understand that Brahman is Satyam,
mm-hmm.
and Maya is Mithya.
Okay.
It's like really saying, there is only Brahman, and what is natural to Brahman is Maya.
Mm-hmm.
But Maya doesn't have a separate being for Brahman, for there to be Brahman and Maya making two.
Right? So whether Maya is there or not, it matters not.
Maya has no separate being for there to be, for anything to be taken away from Brahman. Because it is Brahman. See, that's why you can't categorize this. Maya,
but Brahman is free of it.
Brahman is free of it in that Brahman never goes through any type of change, and Maya has no separate existence apart from Brahman. You know? Your dream, if dream is a good gestalt to use, your dream or imagination, you know, how that's an incidental attribute, a mithya attribute of your being, this imagination, which is something, nobody created it, it's the very nature of your being, but it doesn't bring about any change or addition to yourself, and it is what it is. And so you can't say, is all of this, the Ishvara, better or more than Brahman? You can't categorize it like that, because it is Brahman. It is Brahman, but it's mitya, so that it comes and goes.
Mm-hmm.
It's subject to constant change without what is its actual being undergoing any change at all. So that's the relationship. That's what imagination and dream, even, you know, playing around with your imagination, or, you know, when you wake up from a dream, just thinking about what just happened. You know, the dream is incredible to really think about what happened, especially if you can think of a lucid dream. That's why I like to use imagination. Or even...
Well, is imagination a lucid dream?
It's more like a lucid dream because nothing's covering your consciousness. So you're kind of like a sarvajna, omniscient in reference to the dream, a lucid dream. Whereas when you're not conscious of it, then you're just identified with, so you're just kind of like a jiva in the dream.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that, Are dreams different for jivas and yanis? Or is the dream still similar?
I think it's similar. Yeah, because it's just coming out of, you know, the unconscious material. You can have a dream where in the dream you're yoni in the dream or something like that, but you can have all kinds of dreams. You're not necessarily having a dream where you're yoni in the dream.
Well, a yoni would have unconscious material also, even though he knows what his nature is.
Yeah, the dream need not be an expression of your knowledge. It's just an expression of whatever.
We're looking at Ishwara as knowledge, which makes sense to me. Like, even in physics, they look at that in the same way. Is there a part to it that knowing, for me, knowing more means that I know Ishwara better? Or is it just understanding the things that I know brings me closer to understanding Ishwara?
I don't think any collection of knowledge, of experience will be an addition to your understanding of Ishwara. But your understanding of Ishwara, with your understanding of Ishwara, then your understanding of different situations in life, you keep making connections to understand and kind of revel in the infinite order of Ishwara with more and more and more depth. But that's not giving you knowledge of Ishwara. Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
It's not like a
collection of empirical knowledge is going to put a bunch of that together and you'll have an Ishwara knowledge. That's not going
to
help.
But does that to kind of explain, in a way, our drive to know things?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, when you think of, there's a whole unfoldment that we do on this, when you think of the self as Sat Chit Ananda. Sat is Chit is Ananda. With the Sat, I want to, and plus the Ajnan, the ignorance, I want Sat, existence, being. I want to exist one more day. Longer, not today. I don't want to die today. Let me exist. I'll protect my existence, my being. Because that is my nature. My being is timeless. It will never come to an end, and I don't ever want it to come to an end, but I'm identified with the body, and I think that it will. So I protect my being. Consciousness, let me know knowledge, which is the knownness. Let me know. I'm always trying to collect my knowledge. Whereas, in fact, I am the knownness. That's my nature.
Yeah.
Is the knownness, and I'm trying to get that knownness through the acquiring of knowledge. But actually, the knownness is already acquired. It's my nature. And everything experience I have has as its comes into being known. I am the known. And then I think I'm gathering it, you know, by collecting experiences, but as the chit, I am the known. I am the knownness of all experience.
Again, and why is there that craving to know?
Because I'm trying to get myself back. You know, here I'm a limited being subject to death, when actually I'm set. I'm being itself. I'm ignorant, trying to become, you know, omniscient, to become not to gain knowledge, but I am the knownness, which is the knownness that all knowledge enjoys, right? And so
you're searching for knownness in all.
Searching for yourself, yeah, the absolute knownness.
Yeah. So the quest, you're questing more knowledge
to gain yourself,
to gain that.
The absolute numbness. Mm. And for Ananda, well, that's an obvious one. You know, we're projecting Ananda into the world and then trying to get it back. So we're just, the whole life is we're running after ourselves. Mm-hmm. That's the Ajnana. And the solution to it is removing the Ajnana. There's no other real solution. You're not going to solve the problem in Mithya. Yeah.
Speaking of removing the Ajnana, really basic question. When, during the meditation, you were talking about your presence.
Yeah.
How do you know what that is?
Be
secret. It's probably the same question I keep asking.
Most
just keep
advanced
working on
question
it.
And the basic question are one.
Yeah. But I'm asking it in a very literal, like, fundamental. How do I do that part of the guided meditation?
I'll do it next time for you. But one thing, if you're trying on your own, I should have said this time. Like, you can say your own presence. What do you mean by the word me? Just what makes you you? What is this personal me that is abiding, having this meditative experience? Just your own presence. And as you, so that's what I mean, just the me that is here. And once you're, you see, the more deeply you can relax, deeply relax your body, deeply relax your mind, and just let it be and not cling to it. Even as we did this just for a little while today, but if you even bring in up difficult memories or difficult images of people or difficult situations, and just don't touch them, you just relax. You let the mind totally relax. What happens is that these, the difficult emotion or feeling that's is really caused by tension, and as the mind relaxes, even the image starts to dissipate and it loses its grip on you. And so sometimes you'll find, like when you're trying to really relax and relax your mind, some of the things that are bothering you will come through, and then you can just catch those and just let them go. Let the image go. Let it just relax. Don't cling to it at all. Just simply let it be. And you can get, it's a good practice. You develop that knack of being able to let the situation, then in real life, the world here, I mean, it can be the same where the situations that are happening don't do that to you. You can be, really be present to the situation without getting that happen, without letting that happen. But if you start just with your own mind and learn how to relax into the tension, because it's just a thought, but you know, it's a thought that is contracted, it's causing pain, and you don't need to have that pain.
Well, can you say that with your work with the little ones inside, also the unconscious?
Oh, yeah, that's also very helpful. I'm just, you know, there's different ways that we can go about it. This is just another one. That little child work is very, very helpful.
Because if you just relax with the little ones, they won't, they'll stop talking.
Yeah, and with the little ones, you're actually going into unconscious material, but I'm talking here, where it's more relevant, this one thing that we're talking about, is the people and the situations that cause a lot of anxiety here. They are going to have their childhood counterparts, or you would get so upset often, so that's inner child work. But learning how to recognize that it's a mental image. You are getting all hurt by a mental image. By a memory, you know, that is causing this contraction. And you can sit with that more objectively and just work on just letting it be and letting it go and just letting it relax, taking your hands off, taking your hands away from it and just relaxing. But that's not the only thing we do. We do a lot of all these things. They don't negate each other. They're just different levels of tools.
The other day you used the term also, I think, talking about a similar, same thing.
I was,
letting your guard down.
I was. I'm kind of building on it. Yeah.
What are you building on?
That type of relaxation.
Yeah.
There was a Zen guy used to talk about meditation as opening the hand of thought.
That's very nice.
Isn't that sweet?
That's sweet.
Yes, that's very sweet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Opening the hand of thought.
Just let it go.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Let it go, yeah.
Because usually the tendency is to hold on and work with it.
It's like, yeah. Sometimes you have to, it takes some vairagya to even want to do this. Because you can feel very justified in your anger, and you don't want to do that. But there comes a time when
it seems like that could be softened into, or just let be too.
Yes.
that part of me that wants to be myself, you know, and I'm so right, that could just be another of those pictures. That's very
That's
good.
Exactly, that's really nice, exactly.
Yeah.
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 Mm-hmm. I talked too long tonight, sorry. Yeah. I didn't know
that.
No need for an apology for that.
But we had a long meditation.
Usually
I'm very careful about time. Because when I used to listen to Swamiji, I only had so much range, and after that I wasn't present very much.
Mm. Yeah,
so
but you were listening three times a day. We only get to listen once.
Yeah, but still. Okay, anyway, good.
Okay.
All right.
Can I ask you something now?
Yeah, sure.
So Swamiji has been more emphasizing Ishwara as...
absolute knowledge, manifest knowledge.
As manifest knowledge. Oh, I thought as...
for unmanifest to manifest, unmanifest,
yeah. So as the causal.
Causal is unmanifest knowledge.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I always thought of, I always thought I heard him talk mainly about Ishwara as being, you know, the totality of knowledge.
Yes.
So now he's including the causal, or he's talking about it also as
the causal. Yeah, but it's still the totality of knowledge. But
yeah,
you have
but
to,
in the causal
say,
condition.
Yes,
yeah.
The totality of unmanifest knowledge.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Because in a way, in some sense, it's, we can't really imagine the totality of manifest knowledge. But in some ways, the... causal condition is something we can maybe experientially
you can understand it.
Understand or relate to a little bit more than
because there's no way you can have the whole infinite creation in your mind. You can kind of imagine it and appreciate it to some degree, but
the causal condition is something we experience all the time.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly.
What do you mean?
That's exactly right. Well, like even with it, not talking about deep sleep at all, there's so much unmanifest material that is there in your buddhi right now.
Yeah.
Okay, so you know what it is.
Yeah.
Now say all of it goes into, say you have nirvikalpa samadhi, you're meditating and your mind goes into it. All of that unmanifest knowledge is in causal condition. Right, so that's kind of a little... really sure of that.
A very little one.
Oh, and the mind just even comes to rest momentarily, right?
Yes, exactly.
Stillness or rest. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
Which is happening all the time.
All
we
the
just
time.
Often don't notice it because we just don't notice it.
Yeah. Swamiji said, I rest between thoughts.
That's great.
There's this very short, I don't know if anyone would be interested, but there's like a 20-minute long radio program. You can get it online by Radiolab. And it's called Solid as a Rock. And it talks about the physics pretty much identical to Vedanta. It's really interesting. It talks about how like the further you go into the forms of things, the more you find that there are only ideas.
Mm.
I just like got chills listening to it.
You have, can you send me the link?
That's a great
yeah.
program,
yeah.
too. I love those guys.
Yeah,
yeah, send me the link.
Yeah,
what's it
good.
Called?
Yeah.
Radio Lab.
You send me
they
the link, I'll pass
it
on.
Yeah.
Okay,
late,
that'd, be good. That'd be great.
Late at night.
Solid as a rock. I like that.
Well, Einstein was talking like that too. Just everything is all really
energy.
Physics, energy.
And then I remember reading, I think Gregory Bateson years ago about the theories of some physicists that talk about really everything is information. Everything is information. That's basically saying it's just knowledge.
Yeah.
Right?
It's just knowledge.
There's no material then.
Not really anything matter there.
It's good.